Pythian 9 for Telesicrates of Cyrene, winner of the race in armour. I proclaim with the help of the deep-girdled graces a victory of Telesicrates in the bronze shield race at Pytho. I wish to shout aloud his good fortune and how he has crowned horse-driving Cyrene, whom the flowing-haired son of Leto once carried off from Pelion's echoing windy valleys, and bore the virgin huntress away in a golden chariot to a place where he made her mistress of a land teeming with flocks and superabundant in fruits, to live in the beautiful and prosperous third root of the mainland. Silver-footed Aphrodite lightly touched his god-built chariot with her hand and welcomed her Delian guest. And over the pleasures of their marriage bed, she cast beguiling modesty, linking in close, harmonious union the god and the daughter of wide-ruling Hypsaos, who at that time was king of the haughty Lapiths. A hero in the second generation from Oceanos, the naiad Creusa, daughter of Earth, had given him birth in Pindus's famous dales, after enjoying the pleasure of Peneus's bed. He raised his daughter, fair-armed Cyrene, but she had no interest in walking to and fro before the loom, or in the delights of feasts at home with girl companions. But with bronze spears and sword she fought, and killed wild beasts, and indeed brought great peace and security to her father's cattle, spending but a short time with her sweet bedfellow, sleep, that would drop on her eyelids just before dawn. Once the far shooter Apollo, lord of the wide quiver, found her struggling alone, unarmed with a huge lion. Quickly he summoned Chiron from his home and said, "Son of Philyra, leave your holy cave and wonder at this woman's spirit and mighty power. See how she conducts her fight with unfaltering resolution, a girl with a heart that rises above hardship and a spirit that is untouched by storms of fear. What man fathered her? From what stock has she been torn away, living in these shadowy mountains, hidden places, and making trial of her boundless strength? Is it permitted to lay my illustrious hand on her and reap the honey-sweet flower of her bed?" The mighty centaur smiled subduedly with an indulgent lift of his brow and at once spoke and gave him his advice. "Secret are the keys to divine acts of love which are held by wise persuasion. Phoebus and men and gods alike hold back from taking the first open step towards the joys of sweet congress. And so it is with you. It is not lawful for you to touch untruth, but your tender feelings have led you astray, so that you dissemble in your words. Do you ask this girl's ancestry, Lord? You who know the ordained end of everything and all the paths that lead thereto? How many leaves the earth sends forth in spring? How many grains of sand and sea and river are churned up by blasts of waves and wind? What will come to pass and whence it will come? All this you know well. But if I must really pit myself against wise God, I shall speak. It is as this girl's burden that you have come to this dale, and you are destined to carry her over the sea to Zeus's magnificent garden, where you will make her ruler of a city, after assembling an island people on a hill in a plain. Even now, queenly Libya of the broad meadows is ready to welcome your glorious bride with gladness in her golden palace, where she will, without delay, bestow on her a portion of land to possess by right, with its full share of all kinds of fruits and not unknown to wild beasts. There she will bear a son, whom renowned Hermes will take from his dear mother and carry off to earth and to the seasons on their fine thrones. They will marvel at the child on their knees and drip nectar and ambrosia onto his lips and make him immortal, a Zeus or a holier Apollo, a joy to men who revere him, a close companion of their flocks. Agraeus and Nomios will be his name, though others will call him Aristaios." So he spoke and urged him to attain the sweet consummation of marriage. When the gods are in haste, fulfillment is swift and ways are short. The same day saw the matter accomplished, and they were united in the rich golden chamber of Libya, where now she presides over a beautiful city, famous in the games. And now at sacred Pytho, the son of Carneades has linked her with flourishing good fortune. His victory there has published Cyrene's fame. And she will gladly welcome him to her land of beautiful women, for he brings coveted glory back from Delphi. Great prowess always brings forth many words, but when the list is long, discriminating people prefer to hear a few themes amplified. Appropriateness in all things equally is the best. Long ago, seven-gated Thebes knew that Iolaus, too, endorsed this dictum. When he had struck off Eurystheus' head with his sword's edge, they buried him in the earth below in the tomb where his grandfather lay. Amphitryon, the charioteer, who was the guest friend of the Sone men, after he had left home for the streets of the Cadmeans, home of white horses. Wise Alcmene lay with him and with Zeus, and in a single labour bore mighty twin sons victorious in battle. Dull is the man whose speech cannot encompass Heracles, or who is forever unmindful of the waters of Dirce, which fed both him and Iphicles. For them I shall sing this praise because of the good fortune I enjoyed in answer to my prayer. May the pure light of the loud-voiced graces not desert me, for at both Aegina, and yes, three times on the hill of Knossos, he, I say, has glorified this city by his efforts evading impotent silence. So let no citizen, friend or foe, conceal his labour for the common good, and so treat with contempt that saying of the old man of the sea, give even to your enemy unfeigned and due praise if he has done well. Telesicrates, when they saw you win so often at Pallas's annual festival and at Olympian games and at those of deep-bosomed earth, and even every contest in your own country, each girl would wish in silence that it was you who were her dearest husband or son. As for me, while I may quench the thirst for songs, someone demands payment of a debt, that I should call up again the ancient fame of his ancestors, as they were when they came to the city of Arasa, for the sake of a Libyan woman, as suitors for the far-famed, fair-haired daughters of Antios, whom many of her noble kinsmen sought, and many strangers too, for her beauty was marvellous, and they wished to cull the blossoming fruit of her gold-crowned youth. But her father was planning a more splendid marriage for his daughter. He had heard how once at Argos Danaus had found a way to contrive the speediest of weddings for his 48 unwed girls. Before midday, without delay, he placed the whole group at the course's end and ordered them to decide by a foot race which girl each of the heroes who had come to woo them should win. In just this way did the Libyan offer his daughter, matching her to a bridegroom. He dressed her in finery and set her by the finishing line as the ultimate prize, and proclaimed to all that the man who ran in first and touched her robes should be the one to carry her away. Then Alexidamus, running clear in the swift race, took the noble girl by the hand and led her through the mass of nomad horsemen. Many were the leaves and crowns they rained on him, and many the winged victory wreaths he had won before.